Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Z-Realm podcast. I'm Marty and I am joined here in my home in Greensboro, North Carolina by
KMO and
Olga.
And we watched a movie last night that we'll talk about. We've also been listening to a zombie-themed fictional podcast, an ongoing radio play that was suggested by a couple different listeners. That's called We're Alive, and we'll probably be doing whole episodes devoted to that in the future, but we'll just be mentioning it, I think, in this episode.
And if you haven't listened to it, season 3 just started of We're Alive. It's very good. Now would be a good time to start getting caught up, and maybe by the time we do our show that focuses more on just We're Alive, you'll know what we're talking about. So now is a great time to hunt that down on iTunes or wherever you gather your podcasts and start listening to it. It's a very good story.
But to sort of structure at least the first part of this episode, I want to play some bits of conversation that I recorded with my old friend Paul Goody. Paul Goody is a cartoonist, an illustrator, he's an actor, a stand-up comedian, and he has also written a novel called Love in a Time of Zombies, which is kind of farcical and a lot of fun. So let's listen to a little bit about Paul and his opinions on The Walking Dead.
Well, hey, Paul, let me ask you.
Yeah.
Have you been watching The Walking Dead on AMC?
I have been watching The Walking Dead on AMC. And here's the thing about it. I started out liking it. I liked it, you know, a lot. And then it sort of lost its way for a while. For me, anyway. I was just like, So here's the thing. I have made the statement that the zombie parts are great. I hate the people parts, where the people were interacting. And folks would say to me, well, yeah, but it really, I mean, it's more about the people than the zombies. And that's the problem. I get the idea that it's more about the people than the zombies, which is why when the parts with the people aren't interesting to me, it kind of fails itself. Because I can watch really, really good dramas that don't have any zombies in them. And so you should be able to do really, really great drama and then have the zombies show up instead of it being kind of soap opery and bland, which is why I really liked the season finale, because I thought that finally they kind of upped the stakes with the people themselves instead of having them go through sort of tropes. But you were saying.
Well, I was just asking you if you'd seen it, and yeah, a lot of the criticisms that you have, I share, absolutely, and I like the way you put it. I mean, there are lots of really, really good dramas out there, and if you want to watch people being dramatic, there's a lot better stuff out there than The Walking Dead. But if you want zombies on your TV screen, you know, and not from a DVD or the internet or something, then it's kind of hard to beat The Walking Dead, because there are no other zombie shows. Yet. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I am a fan of the show, and even the soap opera-y bits, I think are maybe not the strong suit of the show, but I think they're good, and they're good enough to get us to the zombie action. So, and I also think that they're really trying to do something as far as establishing a background for these characters and to give them some motivation to move forward and to try to survive and to try to get by and to care about each other. And I think though it may be very soap opera-y, it's still entertaining.
I think it's really early in the morning and we're just way too sober. In spite of that, I will say.
You're not drinking decaf, are you?
I'm drinking detox.
Oh, it probably
like
is
beyond
decaf.
That's the opposite of what you need to be doing.
Yeah.
I'm wired.
Me too.
I already had my cup of tea.
Yeah.
I don't like the drama. It's boring to me. At the same time, there's a voice that says, well, when you're living in a zombie apocalypse, there are going to be times when you'll have to deal with your fellow humans when the zombies aren't around. So, okay, I'll allow that. But that's reality. This is a show. Give me something entertaining. Give me zombies.
Well, I think some of the stuff, though, is very entertaining. Like all the Shane drama is very entertaining. His nefarious deeds are very entertaining. All the you know, the little romance relationship stuff with Glenn and the whatever her name is, the
Maggie.
That's very entertaining. The motivations of the different characters, Herschel with his farm, that's all to me is very interesting. And you know, you get characters like Daryl and his fun brother Merle, and you have the makings for really interesting stories. So it may not be high drama, it's no Shakespearean drama, but it's drama, and the characters are fun and interesting, I think, and the situations obviously are interesting because it's, you know, situations that revolve around zombies and survival. So to me, it's easy to kind of pick apart things because there's definitely chinks in the armor on the show, but for me, it's still competently done and at times really well done. And, you know, there's no point, or there's very few points where I just kind of roll my eyes and go, oh, God, not this again. But that's just me.
I think that's really valid, and I think it does come down to taking it apart sort of shot by shot. I could do with a lot less sort of, you know, hand-wringing and eyes gazing and these really long shots of their grasping for emotion faces. As I've mentioned, I appreciate the show a lot more when I'm listening to it.
Right.
As opposed to when I'm watching it, because the strained acting, and I'm just constantly being taken out of my loop of disbelief, constantly, and I have to, like, sort of shove myself back into that hovel, you know, mm-hmm. like, no, stay there, this is really, you know, stick with it. So, I think it comes down to direction, it really does. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's all these really heavy-duty issues. There's the issue of bringing a child into this world, and so we have like this whole abortion issue, and then there's this issue of communication between a husband and a wife that started the whole thing. I mean, they had issue, you know, they had these communication issues before, and here it is. Here's something's happening in the world where communication might be helpful. You know, good communication skills. This is a good skill to have. And it's like they had opportunities to go to a great Shakespearean, not necessarily Shakespearean, but, you know, a place where they can explore these issues and maybe get a little controversial, and they didn't, and that's fine. I don't expect them to. It's a TV show.
I mean, there have been some I would think some stuff that was controversial, like having the little girl show up in the end of the thing as a zombie. That had to be somewhat controversial to have a child show up as a walking dead and then blow its brains out. Even though they did it in the very opening scene of this second season, or the first season, I guess.
What's controversial about it? That it just hasn't been done on TV, and that it just will be painful for people to watch?
Sure.
So it's just, it's emotionally...
That's sort of like the definition of controversial. You've got things like Kirk's kissing a black woman on Star Trek. That was super controversial. Now, personally, I don't think it's a big deal, but at that time, that was news. And I think that, you know, to do that sort of thing on a TV show is, I mean, definitely going to be controversial to some people. They're going to say that was wrong. You know, I'm going to say it was awesome. But
I do want to give props to The Walking Dead for tackling some racial issues, or at least introducing some racial tension, because most of TV is this fantasy land where, you know, there is, everybody's exactly the same, and, you know, hard work will get you to the top regardless of where you come from, and, you know, once you get there, everybody thinks that, you know, everybody just judges you by the content of your character and your skill set and your, you know, your CV, and that's just gibberish. And The Walking Dead, by taking place in the South and having not only racist characters but sympathetic racist characters, I think is where it shines dramatically when the zombies aren't present.
Who is the sympathetic racist?
Daryl.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Well, he's almost like a reformed racist, I think, or trying to be at times. I mean, he still says some things, but I don't know how much of that he says is from hate and how much of it is just from his upbringing at this point. You know, like he's trying to step back from that.
Well, the episode where we get Merle back, mm-hmm. but Merle isn't really Merle. He's just the voice of Merle in Daryl's head.
Right.
I think that tells us that, you know, since Merle was the older brother, and it seems like maybe there wasn't a father, that Merle is a really profound influence on Daryl's psychology, and there is a little Merle inside of Daryl that is not alien to Daryl. It is part of Daryl. It's part of his makeup. It's where he comes from. And while he is, you know, he went out of his way, he risked his life to save T-Dog,
mm-hmm.
You know, he is not Merle, the voice of Merle is still present.
Right. I mean, that's kind of your standard thing where you have your, you know, your demons. You know, everybody has their demons, and his is clearly Merle. And
but it's also a source of strength for him.
Well, I mean, again, that sort of thing. If you're the kind of person that that has a dark side, I mean, that may be a source of strength, but it also may be something you want to try to maybe, you know, get a little knife in there and slice out some of those tumors, and then, you know, keep the things that keep you strong.
I'm tempted to splice in here a clip from Star Wars Episode 3 where Anakin's fighting Dooku in the beginning, and Dooku saying,
"Since great fear in you, Skywalker, you have hate, you have anger, but you don't use them."
Exactly, yeah. And that's what's going on with Daryl. You know, it's he's got that Merle inside him, but he's struggling against it. I think that's what makes him such a compelling character. It's good stuff.
Well, the whole show is set in the South, and they're not ignoring the fact that the South, has racism, and because there's that exchange between, because when the shit hits the fan, and Shane is yelling at everybody, you know, he makes sure to yell at Daryl in a derogatory way. So we have like the whole kind of like the different classes of.
Well, they're calling him
of bias and prejudice, right? Exactly.
Yeah, it's not just racially motivated.
And it's been noted before that this is a zombie apocalypse movie that's set in the country, mm-hmm. as opposed to the city.
Now, if they were going to be really realistic about it, you know, Atlanta, huge, huge megalopolis that was growing by leaps and bounds, really outstripping the pace of growth in the Northeast or in the West. I mean, most of the growth before the economy went south was in the South. And so you've got people from all over the world. You've got people from all over the world living in Atlanta now. So really, if this was a bit more in touch with reality, we'd probably have some Indian people and some Pakistani people and some Korean people. You know, we'd have people, some Brazilians. We'd have people from all over the industrialized first world. Yeah, we have Glenn. But Glenn seems to be obviously, you know, native to the U.S. in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, he has no discernible accent. There is no reference to any sort of ethnicity. He's just, you know, in the parlance of racial talk, he's honorary white. You know, we're not making any issue whatsoever about his being Asian. He's just another guy.
Right.
That we don't have room in the plot for it. We don't have room in the sort of, you know, backroom discussions about racial politics going into the scripts for Glenn and his ambiguous Asian-ness.
And they could definitely address that later. You know, we might get a Glenn backstory thing where he talks about his parents coming over and or grandparents and him talking about this stuff and being sick of these stereotypes. I mean, you could get that. So,
but, you know, with the name Glenn, and do we even have a last name for him?
Probably, but I don't know it.
Yeah. Okay, then he's probably Chinese, but could be Korean.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I appreciate. I mean, this is your typical TV, your whole whitewashing, your conformist TV formula. And the opposite of that is what I like about We're Alive. Because they have the Filipino superintendent guy, and then they have like the Riley, the French accented or whatever, other accented person.
She's
that America's
super hot, too. I don't know if you've seen photos of her.
No.
Holy moly, yeah.
Yeah, no, I looked at the cast photo, you know, that they have on the page, and I couldn't discern who was who, but that is very realistic, mm-hmm. you know, and then we have the Saul character where we can't figure out if he's Latino and Jewish or what.
Right.
But pretty much, yeah, he's something like that. And it's L.A., yeah, there's going to be a melting pot.
Yeah,
it's America, it's going to be a melting pot. And also, not for the obvious reasons, you know, we must have a... Right, we must have a Latino character because that's who does the sweeping up, and we must have a black character. It's like Riley, right? Yeah, I mean, she's just an actress friend of theirs that is going to play the role, but that adds so much dimension to it because it's just a randomly accented person for no reason that doesn't do anything to the plot. It's just reality.
But to me, that's one of those amazing things about it being a radio play is that, I mean, obviously you're listening to it going... You're creating these images in your mind. So if you create someone in your mind as darker skinned or lighter skinned or whatever, because I mean, if you listen to just the audio of Walking Dead, your image of Glenn would not be necessarily an Asian dude unless somebody goes, hey, who's that Asian guy?
Well, Herschel does that enough,
but,
right?
But what I'm saying is you don't necessarily have that image. And right. with We're Alive, you don't have any image.
Right.
Because, I mean, seriously, Michael could be black. I don't know if he's black. I don't picture him as black. You know, I don't picture Angel as black because they define him. They describe him at some point as blonde. So I immediately
they took did. Him out well, we had the black character sounding very black, and that was Bill.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't picture Bill as black.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did. Okay. He sounded really black to me. But I've got the IMDb page up for The Walking Dead, and Glenn does not have a last name.
It's just Glenn.
It's just Glenn.
Well, I mean, and there may be a name, and they may create one. But yeah. I didn't know what it was. But I that's one of the things that I love about We're Alive is that it's in my head. So these characters look as grizzled as I want them to look. They're not necessarily pretty like they are in Walking Dead. You know, in Walking Dead, it's you've got to throw a pretty face up there or an interesting face or something. But, I mean, these, like the Dunny, the
skinny face.
What's the dude? The ex-Marine Bert.
Bert, yeah.
Bert, man, I just have a whole mix of images in my head for Bert. I don't really have a real image of him, but I imagine like a guy with a big old beard, and he's just kind of like a bulldog-looking body, and he's kind of got some scars. And
did you see Tropic Thunder?
Yeah,
I'm thinking of Nick Nolte's character from Tropic Thunder.
Okay, yeah, with the arm.
Well, he's missing both hands, or he's supposed to be, but turns out he really isn't.
He's not missing either. Yeah. But to me, We're Alive is really excellent because it frees itself up from that requirement that a TV show or a movie has of showing you something.
Although Michael and Angel, I can't easily distinguish them by their voices.
No, I can't.
And it's because they both have very pretty, actorly trained voices, and I put pretty faces on those pretty voices.
They overly enunciate sometimes. It's a detriment. You know, because people aren't going to necessarily stop and practice their elocution in the middle of a zombie, you know, onslaught. But these guys are going, quickly, we must get down to the lair below us where we will begin to battle these guys. And it's just not like that. They'd be like, get the fuck down here. We got to shoot these guys. And
I hadn't really planned to include any clips from We're Alive in this week's episode because we're going to do an entire episode on We're Alive. But we've talked about it so much now, I guess we have to go ahead and listen to some clips. So I've got one here that is from very early on in the series. Basically, our three main characters, at least early on, are Michael, Saul, and Angel. And they are all in the army, and Angel is the only officer of the bunch, but Michael is the most natural leader. So leadership has defaulted to Michael. But they have gone to the apartment building tower of Angel's girlfriend, hoping to rescue her. And they get there, and they find that Angel's girlfriend is a zombie. They have to put her down. But then, once they're there, they realize that this building is pretty defensible. And they've got some other people that they've collected along the way. And now they're just clearing the building and getting it ready to be their fortress in the zombie apocalypse. And they discover that the guy who owns the building, a guy named Bill, is holed up on the top floor. So here is an encounter with Michael and his crew and their first interaction with Bill.
We're Alive, a story of survival. Chapter 2, The Two Things, Part 1 of 3.
Nothing used to scare me. I didn't fear death or what might be there on the other side if today was my day. That was then, and this is now. We arrived on the top floor after 4 hours of going through the rest of the building. My eyes were starting to blur, so it took several attempts to bring down the last one of those things we found on the ninth floor. There'd be time to rest later. We only had one more to go.
You ready?
All set. Saul, you good?
Whatever.
Hey, keep your shit sharp. Only one more to go.
Man, ain't no one up here.
On three. One, two, three! Fall back!
Get back, motherfucker!
Well, who the fuck's shooting at us?
Hold your fire! Hold it! We're not them! We're normal!
Why don't you peek your head out around the corner and let me see?
fucking asshole! I'm not one of them!
See? You fall for my tricks. But I'm not gonna fall for one of yours.
Tattoo, who the hell is this guy?
It's Bill. He owns the building. Well, he inherited it. I don't know he was still here.
You want me to open up with the saw? He's only got a shotgun. If I bonfire around the corner, we'll shred him.
Look, I may hate this fuck, but we're not gonna kill him.
Why not? See, that too agrees with me.
Hey, Michael's right. He's only acting in self-defense.
Maybe you should try reasoning with him.
What do you think we've been trying to do?
Bill, it's all right. We're here to help. How could I be talking to you right now if I was one of them?
Maybe you're different. Why should I take a chance if I don't have to?
You just need to trust us.
Sure. I'll trust you. Why don't I just put my shotgun down so you can come closer and tear my fucking face off like the others?
So, knife.
What are you doing? You're not going to...
I'm just using it for its reflection. Hell, if I'm sticking my head out again. All right. He's created a barricade outside his apartment with furniture. It's just like the other floors. He's halfway down the hall, facing away. We don't have a clear shot. Tattoo, is there any way around?
Yeah. You could take the elevator to the other side, but he has a clear shot of that too. His penthouse spans most of the floor, with a few rooms along the back. There's no way around.
Well, at least we know he's not one of them.
So now, this next clip that I'm going to play is from much later in the series, and I'm playing it because it illustrates a topic of conversation that I'm going to bring up with Paul Goody, and that is hulking, monstrous zombies. Now, key to understanding what you're about to hear is the idea that the French woman, Riley, is an expert marksman with a bow and arrow. And you'll hear her firing arrows at zombies, taking them down with headshots, and, well, you'll hear what comes after that. They are all trying to escape from a building from which they have just rescued Datu, who you heard in that last clip. So here is Angel and Riley and a very groggy Datu and another character whom I will not introduce because he plays such a small role.
You're gonna need to make that hole bigger.
On it. Oh God, I think they found us. Datu's late, we might be able to carry him, but this guy too?
Don't leave me here. I think I can walk.
Let's just hope you can run.
Where does this take us?
No idea. I think this door leads us to the lobby.
You sure?
Wherever it goes, there's light under the door, so...
So we run like hell.
Like we're running from hell.
On three. One.
Oh, screw it. Just go!
One.
Down. It's plexiglass. Shoot it. We're out of bullets. Come on. Break! Damn you!
I'm trying.
Use Riley's gun. Help me break this one.
Five. I've got two left.
Come on, six. Give.
I think it's coming up from the corner.
No! It's not moving!
Seven.
Riley, this door is taking too long. We need to go back upstairs and find another way.
This may be our last chance. Help me retrieve my arrows. Keep working the door.
It's a trap.
What did he say?
Hey, Hannah. This arrow's shattered.
We just had a couple of bullets.
That isn't helping.
Listen. Outside. You hear that?
All right. This will have to do. Wait, what?
Someone's out there.
Is it our people? How did they...
That's a striker. Grab it. Signal them.
I've got it. Come on, please have some juice left in you.
Is that it?
The Hummer! There! They heard it!
Your people?
Thank God!
Over here!
Angel, you're covered up! So people! That one's splintered. I only have one left I can use. is.
The Hummer's under attack! God damn it!
Angel, they're not going to make it in time.
Then you know what you have to do. Take that thing down!
Second there, I was...
Yeah, me too. But Riley here, talk about...
Oh, God. It wasn't enough.
It's getting back up? She shot it right through the eye. What the hell does it take to stop these things?
It was safer up there.
Saul!
Get away from the door.
Oh, Saul!
Hurry!
Come on! Here, help me with Datu. No, he's all right, I think.
Come on!
The Hummer's stuck behind the barriers. We got ways to go.
Move!
Company.
So, give me your pistol.
Hey, badass, up on his feet.
Yeah, I got him.
Move faster, you two.
We got you, Doctor. Just hold on.
Step it up. We can't hold him off much longer.
Bert, how the hell did you find us?
They had help. Now get in here.
Michael!
Michael?
Keep moving. I'm almost out.
What the hell is that thing?
Something that I have noticed in some movies, particularly the Resident Evil movies, and now I'm listening to this podcast called We're Alive, the zombie survival podcast, there's this trend to make the zombies superhuman monsters. So they're not just shambling animated corpses, but they're big, giant, muscular things, or... I saw this game at my friend Marty's place. It was called Dead Space 2, and it's like zombies in space, but they're not just zombies. They're these superhuman creatures with all kinds of weird appendages and things, and that kind of...
Well, I think that's McFarlane's influence, right?
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Say more about that.
What's his first name? You know who I'm talking about.
I do. Spawn.
Comic book guy.
Todd. Todd McFarlane.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the... Todd McFarlane, yeah, one of the things about him, I mean, when he came along, you know, you start getting, I mean, superheroes have always been kind of misproportioned, but with his stuff, I mean, it was just crazy. How many guns can we fit on this guy? We're going to put muscles on top of muscles, that sort of thing. And so the idea of these huge, hulking, like crazy abnormal bodies, I think came about around that time. And I think that's part of the thing, you know, bigger, stronger, worse off, you know, for the people who have to live it. So the idea is that if you get an enemy who's not only unstoppable because you can shoot them and they won't die, but also they're bigger than you and stronger, I guess they think that it's more frightening. I don't know if I'd agree with that. One of the things that I remember growing up in a really small town is if you're walking around on a road and somebody's walking towards you, you don't know exactly who they are right away. Could be a man, could be a woman. Could be walking backwards towards you, be walking away from you. You can't really tell. They're just a little blip on the horizon. And as they get closer, you're like, okay, well, that's a man. And then all of a sudden you realize who they are. And one of the things that I think is scary about a normal-sized zombie is that you wouldn't know that it was a zombie right away until you notice, oh, it's walking kind of like a zombie, so and so forth. I mean, that's part of the with Night of the Living Dead is that humans and zombies, you have humans being mistaken for zombies in the end. Spoiler alert, sorry. zombies mistaken for human in the beginning. And so the idea, if zombies are these huge, you know, ultra monster things, then that part of it isn't there. That's one of the things that I really didn't like about the remake of The Crazies. Did you ever see the remake or the original?
I saw the remake.
Okay. In the original, they don't have zombie, you know, aspects of them at all. They just look like people. They're just people who go crazy and start setting things on fire and stuff.
Hey, Dad.
Yeah.
I'll be back in a sec. I'm gonna make a picture.
Okay. Betty's gonna draw me a picture.
Ask her to draw you a picture of zombies.
So that's one of the things. We'll see what she does. Usually when she draws a picture, it's of her face with either a smiley face or a frowny face, depending on how she feels.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Oh, you don't want to get a frowny face, though. No. It's like a citation, kind of. So the basic thing is that I think the more human zombies are, the scarier they actually become. I thought of a different take on the zombie story that I think would actually be kind of cool, which is, okay, so you have the zombie sort of thing where they're basically humans who catch a disease, die, and then come back. That's like the standard version of it now. I like the old idea of zombies being dead people who are brought back to life. So they die naturally and they're brought back to life somehow. Like reanimator or whatever. The idea that people who are dead start coming back to life, maybe through occult means, maybe through scientific means, but instead of them wreaking havoc, they just want their old lives back. So you've got people who have remarried all of a sudden having to deal with their old husband coming back from the dead, parents wanting to get the inheritance back that their children had. I think in some ways it would be more frightening than things trying to kill you.
You know, I kind of think that there was a French movie that did that.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so here we get into one, big hulking zombie-ish monsters. And we watched just last night the first Resident Evil movie, which features big, hulking, zombie-like monsters, or one, anyway. Mm-hmm. So,
does that become a thing in the next series of Resident Evil?
In the games, there was a beast that they were making that was like the Uber zombie, and it was called Nemesis. And that was a project, and that actually is referenced in the Resident Evil movie, the Nemesis project. And that thing's freaky. And it is actually, as I recall, unkillable. So it's a thing that pursues you, and all you can do is slow it sufficiently to escape, but you cannot kill it. I think until perhaps the end when you get some uber weapon, and then you can lay it low.
And its bite or its scratch mutates a lot faster. I mean,
it's just like a more virulent version of it.
You know, in a world of zombies like that, my knee-jerk reaction is, well, there's not much I could do. I'll see you. I'm checking out. You know what I mean? When they become superhuman like that, what do you do with them?
I agree with Paul's point in that you lose a lot. You know, when zombies are difficult to distinguish from humans at first glance, particularly at a distance, and you know you're not sure how to react, there's a certain creepiness there. There's a lot of a lot of psychological issues that you can attach to that. But when it's the Hulk with rotting flesh,
right,
that roars and has a tongue that's 10 feet long and can wrap around your ankle, and it has, you know, claws that can dig into concrete, we have left the building in terms of the zombie apocalypse meme.
It's not a zombie thing anymore.
Right.
It's a monster movie at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, monster movies are interesting. Obviously, from the time we've started, you know, having movies, there have been monster movies, so we have monsters represent something important in our psyche, but it's a different animal from the zombie film.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons why I think they do it, when Resident Evil being based on a video game, video games give you enemies that you can quickly identify so you can know how to approach them, to take them out, or how to stay away from them. So the way they do that is they say, here's this large shape, here's this different shape, here's a different creature, it's a different color, it's got a different weapon, and you know it instantly, and you go, oh, this is that guy, I need to pull out my flamethrower because I can't stop this guy with bullets or whatever. So they give you a variety of enemies, and in doing that, I think it was not necessarily the desire to create these stereotypical sort of, you know, variants on zombies as it is to, well, we need more than just one kind of enemy in this game. Let's make, you know, the big zombie, the one that explodes, the one that spits, the one that leaps. And, you know, then you have to have a different way of fighting them rather than just standing there and headshot. So I think it's an offshoot of the needs of a game being then translated into a movie. And people being familiar with that whole thing, I think when you get to something like We're Alive, they go, okay, now typically in zombie media, and maybe the person that came up with We're Alive, their exposure to zombies was more through games like Resident Evil. Maybe they decided they needed to throw in these different monsters.
Well, it becomes really interesting because they're figuring it out as we're figuring it out. And I'm kind of hanging on their every word for a description as to, like, what are these different zombies? Why are they ambushing? Why? They're not acting like zombies.
No, well, there's... You guys have... Well,
are there other movies aside from Resident Evil that employ this?
The giant zombie type thing?
Human...
That's a good question.
Superhuman zombie. I'll have to noodle on that one. Yeah, I mean, it really does. If a zombie is ambushing you, yes, we have left the zombie meme. We can no longer apply these really great metaphors of the zombie horde, the shambling zombie horde that has no, that can't think, that just like taps into this hive mind mentality, this consumer hive mind.
Well, yeah, like you, in my mind, the zombie is this creature that moves forward pursuing food. You know, sustenance, and anything that does anything beyond that, be it, you know, hide and wait, or, you know, group, or, you know, God forbid, any of this other crazy stuff, then it's like, it's not what I think of as a zombie.
In We're Alive, the zombies are, if they were smart in life, they're super smart in death, which is like,
well
that's no fun.
Yeah. Well, there's that, I mean, we can edit this out, but that one tattooed zombie or whatever.
Yeah, there's like an uber zombie.
I don't even want that thing to ever come back because it's so terrifying. But, you know, when it shows up, I don't like that because that it takes away, like we're talking about, that whole thing with the, well, they look like a person. I think it's probably okay, you know, and then you let them inside the wall and you realize,
and no, he's impersonating people and he's sounding like people and it's like, okay, well, that's not a zombie.
I mean, you guys just recently watched the Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, we watched the 1977 or 78, something like that.
Right. But that has that same, it's like The Thing, where there's this storyline of there are people that are amongst us that perhaps are not what they seem. And that's a real source of terror. So when you've got something like these zombie movies where, hey, that's somebody over there. Is that Ted over there across the street? Let me go. Oh my God, he's eating me. You know, that's scary. And in the thing that pops into my mind, I mean, obviously The Crazies, which Paul referenced, I mean, there's in the original George Romero version, there's a scene where this couple, it's right at the beginning of the movie, this couple wake up and their children are killing them, you know, and it's their children. But, I mean, that's terrifying. But in the Dawn of the Dead remake, the Zack Snyder film, I mean, there's the scene where they go, hey, what's she doing here, the little girl, at the very beginning?
Mm-hmm.
And she's not that little girl anymore. And that's terrifying. You know, that's extremely terrifying.
You think that was a Crazies reference?
It wasn't a Crazies reference. Oh. It was the people you see may not be what you see right off the bat. And because it's a little girl, it's even more terrifying. You know, this is not a hulking beast. But she's strong and fast and vicious.
But apparently Rick Grimes had seen the remake of Dawn of the Dead, because when he saw the little zombie girl in the pilot episode,
yeah,
he didn't hesitate.
No, well, she had half her face missing, too. It was kind of obvious that there was something going on.
Get out! Get out, you can't be in here!
Don't
listen to anything she says. She's a holographic representation of the Red Queen.
You have to get out.
Modeled after the head programmer's daughter. She'll try to deceive us, confuse us.
I wouldn't advise this. Disabling me will result in loss of primary power.
Say anything to stop us from shutting her down.
I implore you.
Implore away.
Please. Down here.
Let's talk a little bit about Resident Evil, because we hadn't planned to watch it. I just saw that you had it on Blu-ray, and Olga hadn't seen it, and you were willing to watch it again. And
yeah.
In my memory, it was the best of the Resident Evil films, and we watched it, and wow, it was really tightly paced. It was really well put together. There was some stiff, sort of cheesy dialogue, and the sort of geopolitical corporate overtones were a little broadly drawn, but still a pretty good movie. No zombies until nearly the halfway mark, I think.
Oh, right,
I
mean, yeah.
A good part of it is just the characters interacting with each other, penetrating this underground facility, interacting with the computer, dodging booby traps. It's obviously based on a video game, because in a lot of respects it's very much like a video game, particularly as Alice discovers her powers.
Right.
And so I was really pleased with it. Then the zombies came along, and they are true Romero zombies. You know, they look like humans. They're easily mistaken for humans. They seem like they're sick or they're crazy or something. But then when there's 20 of them and they're all trying to bite you, you have to come to terms with the fact that they are not people and that you can't deal with them as people. And then we get into the weird stuff with
right.
the liquor and the all the... The dogs, oh yes, the dogs, and all the espionage stuff, and I was really, really pleased with that. That held together really well. It's a film released in 2002 by Paul W.S. Anderson, is it?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Yeah, there's too many directors named Anderson right now. But
there's too many Paul Anderson directors. A couple of those.
Olga, what were your impressions of Resident Evil?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Well, you know, it starts... it's definitely... reminded me of a video game, because every time there was a fight scene, it would go into really loud head-bashing music.
Yes.
So you know it was time to kick some ass. It starts really fast, and you don't know what's going on, and there's all kinds of questions, and you are sort of complicit with the characters, the amnesiac characters as well, because they don't know what's going on, and you don't know what's going on. And meanwhile, things are happening, and that's really great. That's always good.
You were talking about the cheesy dialogue. I think it would be awesome. And surely YouTube is full of clips from the video game.
Oh.
Resident Evil is notorious for the cheesy, shitty voice acting in the game. It is some of the most stilted and wooden stuff you've ever heard, and it's awesome. So especially the very beginning when they first start talking, and it's epic. So if you could insert a couple of those in there, I think you'd do yourself a you know,
service. And the listeners.
Yes, it is. Because I'm sure a lot of people listening have played the games, but there's probably at least as many people who have not.
I have not.
And they're good. They're good. And they, you know, and the movie works the way the game works as far as introducing these things. And, you know, you don't really get to the idea that what is going on, and the whole Umbrella Corporation connection is not something that's handed to you right away.
Find anything, Jill?
Nothing. What is this all about? I can't figure it out at all.
Beats me, too.
Now it's Wesker's time to disappear. I don't know what's going on.
Well, it can't be helped. Let's search for him separately. I'll check the dining room again.
Okay, I'll try the door on the opposite side.
This mansion is gigantic. We could get into trouble if we get lost. We should start from the first floor, okay? And, Jill, here's a lockpick. It might be handy if you, the master of unlocking, take it with you.
Thanks. Maybe I'll need it.
Listen, if something happens, let's meet up in this hall.
This time I'll be there.
In the later films, which, you know, we won't be talking about because you haven't seen them and you haven't seen them all, it gets to the point where I get a little irritated with the films because obviously it's drawing so much material from the video games and there's not time to put it all in context, and we're just expected to either roll with it or, you know, it's just there's a whole lot of inside material for people who have already played the games. A lot of characters, particularly in the third and fourth films, you know, I don't know who they are. I don't know why I'm supposed to care about them, or, you know, I don't know why there's this 12-foot tall hooded guy with a, you know, like a, an engine block for an axe walking around. There's no explanation as to what this guy is, or so I thought that this first film was really good at obviously taking something from a developed source material and presenting it in a coherent way, because the later films, they don't do that so well.
Well, it is very Japanese, the games. So, I mean, they really did a good job of kind of clearing all that stuff up for the movie, because it's not super clear in the game.
So let's think about chronology for a minute, because Paul was talking about how he thought that Todd McFarlane is largely responsible for the hulking zombie monsters. And I can kind of see that. Because in when I first got into comics, like in the late 70s, early 80s, your main influences, everybody was sort of copying the style of like John Buscema.
Mm-hmm. Buscema, I'm familiar with.
Well, he is really influential because Marvel Comics put out a book called How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. And it was all basically how to draw like John Buscema. Anyway, in the 1970s and 1980s, superheroes looked like really buff, athletic people. Mm-hmm. But unless they're the Hulk or somebody, achievable bodies. They basically look like somebody you might see in the ring in the UFC or something.
Mr. Universe contestant. Something.
Then along came this group of artists at Marvel Comics that included Todd McFarlane and a few others. Rob Liefeld is the name I was looking for, and Jim Lee, I think, is one. And they sort of became superstars at Marvel. And Marvel was just being really sort of dickish to them, and they were like, they would have been happy. You know, that was their dream job, to be superhero cartoonists at Marvel Comics. And Marvel was just so asinine in their treatment of the talent that their top talent said, fuck this. And they went and they started Image Comics.
Okay.
And some of the first really iconic series from that, one was Spawn. And Spawn dealt with demonic issues, but you also had superhero-type characters. You also had, like, super agents with all these weird big guns and stuff. And that imagery sort of came around and entered the public consciousness in the early 90s.
Okay.
And the Resident Evil video game, from which the movies spring, were from the mid-90s, right?
Probably.
Mid to late 90s?
Yeah, mid, I would think.
So I can certainly see that that progression of imagery, that sort of makes sense to me. You know, that you get the Image Comic aesthetic,
right,
which feeds into this first video game, which was, how did you describe it before we started recording, the first Resident Evil games?
It's a genre. It's called survival horror. Mm-hmm. And Resident Evil sort of established that as a genre that now other games have followed suit. And the idea is to take the character that you play and put you in a situation where you must survive and things are horrifying. There's a series called Silent Hill that takes place in a freaky world. This has been made into a movie now too. But it's a very popular franchise that was maybe the second most popular survival horror franchise. But the main one was always Resident Evil. It established a thing. No one had ever done anything like that before. So when it came out, people were like, what the hell? This is awesome. And it just exploded. So, you know, they're up to, I think Resident Evil 5 was the latest one. And it's spectacular. It's on all the current gen consoles and stuff.
So I think one thing this all brings up, and which we don't discuss much, is the interaction between comic books, video games, and movies.
Right. Popular culture is what we're talking about. I mean, this is where our ideas about things come from as a human or American group of humans. I mean, we're definitely getting all these influences visually and, you know, thematically and story-wise, you know, from all these different places, but definitely that look and that sort of idea of a zombie or of a monster or whatever, superheroes. I mean, you know, these things do sort of change over time, and I mean, I would have never thought of the Todd McFarlane influence on that stuff, but that's for sure what's going on, at least in the look of it, I think.
Let's leave off here. We will come back and revisit my conversation with Paul in a future episode.
Okay.
And also, we are going to be watching...
We'll watch The Dead from 2010.
And we'll watch American Zombie.
American Zombie from some year unknown to me.
One of the 0 years.
Yes, it's recent.
Okay. What about Fido?
We've done a whole episode on Fido.
I know you have.
I would watch Fido every day.
I haven't watched Fido.
We hook you up with some Fido.
Right on.
While you're doing your editing, that'd be a perfect time for some
Fido. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because that's here. It's available.
I can quote large portions of Fido. I've seen it enough. So.
Fido is so good.
It is. It is so good.
It's so sweet and good. All right, so are we done with this episode?
I do believe we are done. Perhaps we should... do the formal final.
Well, I would like to request that people go to iTunes and write reviews of the Z-Rom podcast. That would be great. So, you know, we're not asking for money or anything, but if you could take a few minutes and go over there and write a glowing review, that would help us a lot, get us more listeners.
And if you know of some zombie material, which is very much overlooked and that we should be covering, like the people who suggested we listen to We're Alive.
And thank you to those people.
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't know your names, but thank you.
You know who you are, and thank you. I'm loving We're Alive, and I've told so many people about it. So, I mean, that's the way these things spread, is one person goes, here's a thing you might like, and yes, we like, and thank you. So, you know, we'll keep passing that along, and if you're out there and you're liking this, then pass it along and let other people know.
Join us on Facebook, send us email, all that good stuff.
You can find us in various places, so a little bit of searching will lead you to us. Do that, and I guess that's it for now. This is episode 27 of the Z-Realm podcast. So until next time, keep your shotgun loaded, and when you shoot, aim for the head.